All right, I'm going to begin with a pretty easy question. I think we can figure this one out. All right, so I want you, like, just to give me a general direction. If I ask you to point to heaven, where is heaven? I mean, be proud about it. Come on, Annecy, which I know you know where this is. Good job. All right. All right, so every one of you just, you know, pointed up to heaven, okay? And that's good, right? Because, like, now, I'm not much of a camper. My idea of, like, going on a camping trip is usually, like, to a nice hotel that has, like, you know, a spa and a pool and, like, a soft, comfy bed. But every so often, my brothers get me out, and I love nothing more than, like, going to a place where you can see all the stars, right? And you just sort of lay back, and it's dark, and it's like you can see all of them. You know, you can see the faint hint of the Milky Way. You can see just this grand expanse that is space. I mean, and it's natural for us to point to space because it's so mysterious. It's so massive, right? Like, our sense of God is somewhere in that amazing unknown and hugeness. And this is actually one of two ways that we really sort of understand what heaven is like, or at least where heaven is, right? And we get them from two distinct philosophical traditions. The first is sort of our Hebrew and Jewish ancestry, right? And there's a really distinct way in which they see heaven, and I'm going to talk about that in a second. But the one we're sort of, I think, more familiar with, or at least that comes to mind most easily, right? Everyone pointed up, is sort of this Greek philosophical notion of heaven, right? And we get that because there's a sense in which we are aware that there's something out there beyond us, right? That it's sort of separated from us, but not just separated physically, but separated even in terms of time and space, beyond and outside of us. And we get that from our you know, some of that Greek influence in our early church days, right? So, you know, we have this sort of Greek philosophical tradition and this Jewish tradition. And this Greek tradition, you know, one of the best examples, even though I wasn't very good at philosophy, I was able to get this guy, right? Plato, right? You know, Plato's sort of the classic early Greek philosopher, and he has this thing called the allegory of the cave, right? And so I'm going to do my best to try to explain, you know, what that is. It's essentially, you know, that we, if you imagine that all of us were just sort of stuck in a cave staring at a wall. Boring, I know, right? You know, we're just sort of staring at a wall, and behind us there's a fire. So we can see, like, light on the wall, but we can't actually see the light itself. And every so often, some sort of object that comes across casts a shadow on that wall, right? So we don't even see the object that's casting the shadow, but we can see what's on the wall, and we're like, oh, tree. That looks like a tree, right? Like, you know, we don't actually see the tree behind us. And, you know, the allegory gets a little more complicated, you know, than that. But for our purposes, that's sufficient, right? That we know that we're not seeing the actual, like, the perfect figure of tree. We're just sort of seeing its shadow on the wall. And so Plato said that there was this place called the forms, and then what we saw, right? This immaterial world apart from us, and then the physical world. And this sort of led down the time this idea that the physical world was somehow less than, right? If we're only seeing the shadow, but we're not seeing the true thing itself, it's sort of less than the form, that pure sense of itself. And we would actually, you know, we kind of would have a fight about this within Christianity, and it would lead to something called Gnosticism, right? Which comes from this idea of gnosis, or secret knowledge. Because of this sort of Platonic idea, right? Well, if we know that the forms are out there somewhere, that this physical world must sort of be less than, well, then it only makes sense that, you know, the real God, according to Gnostics, right, not Catholics, the real God must be bigger than that. And so whoever created this physical world was sort of a fake God, not the real God at all, right? And so they created this dualism. Now, I would say our church condemned Gnosticism really early on, right? So we don't believe that this world is bad, but that separation was already planted in our minds. That sort of, that differentiation between sort of where we think heaven is and where we are two separate and distinct and totally independent realities, right? So, I mean, like, when you think of heaven even, what do you think of? And it's okay, I think of fluffy clouds and harps too, you know? Right, maybe not, like, you know, harps, because I've never actually played one. But, you know, some sort of awesome instrument, right? You know, some cool, like, you know, music and stuff like that. Like, that's heaven in a lot of people's imaginations. And even our prayers today, even as we talk about today's Feast of Ascension, it's kind of important, like, where we think heaven is, because that's where Jesus went. So if we think that, you know, Jesus ascends to this far away, totally different, independent heaven from us, I think, you know, there's some strengths to that, because that's sort of a destination we want to be in. But there are also some challenges, because if we're supposed to follow Christ, who is the head into this faraway space, you know, we have to sort of look at it in both traditions, in both the philosophical tradition of the Greeks that we inherited, but also our Jewish ancestry. And their sense of heaven isn't quite as separate. In fact, their sense of heaven, I would argue, is sort of like, you know, parallel dimensions. I know, you thought you were going to get through at least one homily with me without a science fiction reference. Sorry to disappoint. Right, you know, but like this new sort of Marvel movie of, you know, parallel dimensions and all that kind of thing, the multiverse. All right, I'm all alone here. But stay with me, okay? So in the sense that, like, I think this Jewish understanding of heaven isn't that heaven is sort of out there in some different space, but it's here. Occupying our space, but on a different plane, on a different sense of what's going on. It's almost as though, like, heaven is the invisible thing that is participating in our visible world. You know, we can argue about the new translations, and it's positive and it's negative, and I think there are a lot of good arguments for both sides. But one translation I actually really did appreciate, when we sort of retranslated the Nicene Creed, we changed the words visible and invisible, or we changed the words seen and unseen to visible and invisible. Now, and the difference for me is, like, my grandma lives, you know, in Andover, and she's in a skilled nursing facility. She's unseen to me right now, but she's still very much visible, right? She's visible to the people around her. But this idea that we also believe in the invisible, that's what we can never see, or that we can only imagine, that which we can only hope for, I think is sort of a greater, fuller sense of the sort of the mystery that we believe in as Catholics. And I think it gets to that Jewish part of our ancestry, that sense in which we recognize that we don't just believe in the things we can see with our eyes, or the things we could have seen with our eyes. We even believe in the things that are too fantastic to have ever been seen, right? This invisible reality. And I think it has a lot of consequences for us, because if God, if Jesus is taking up into this invisible reality, but is still very much present in this world, what we aim for changes ever so slightly. You see, if our work towards heaven is always in this sort of faraway other place, I think a danger is that we could always sort of say, well, it doesn't matter here. It doesn't matter right now, because heaven is always sort of far away. I'm just working for that faraway heaven, and so whatever I do here is immaterial because I'm working over there. But if we take our Jewish ancestry, if we take this other sense of heaven, if we take something a little bit more closer to home and recognize that this dimensional thing is happening, where actually the invisible is with us, what we do here impacts the invisible. If our heaven is as close to sort of the imagination of reaching out and touching it, then what I do to the environment here matters. What I do to my neighbor here matters. What I do to the stranger here matters, and dare I say, even what I do to my enemies matters. If heaven is merely this transition into this God space, but is impacted by our human space, then our participation in life now is extremely important. And how we handle that, how we help create and form this space that will be, you know, another great word is transfigured, right? Transformed, to be transformed into that godly space, it requires the material space, the physical space, the present, what we're doing now. And so that sense of heaven gives us another orientation of where Christ is. It isn't some afar-off space. Right? And that's a beautiful idea. I don't want to completely dismiss it, because I love staring at the stars. I love being lost in mystery. But I think having that other sense of that space is equally important, because it commands, it gives us our mission. This Feast of Ascension is our missioning feast. It tells us how we are to follow that head into this godly space, and it is necessary for us to work in this space to do so. And so I think that's why that the two angelic figures at the end of our first reading ask the disciples, why are you staring up? Christ came through the physical world. Christ came into this world in a mysterious way. He will do that again. He told you what to do. Go do it. Go feed the hungry. Go clothe the naked. Go visit those in prison. Go do the works that I've commanded you to do, that Jesus has commanded you to do. And so I think our feasts of Ascension and Pentecost are intimately related. We're given our mission in this feast, but we know we can't do it by ourselves, and so we're given our support in the next one. Today, my friends, the invitation is clear. Where do you find God? Where do you search for Jesus? Is it in this faraway space, which has its beauty, it has its mystery, it has its own invitation? Or are you also willing to see God as a transfiguration of this space, of this present reality, of seeing God in maybe in our enemies, maybe seeing God in our stranger, or perhaps most precious of all, my friends, seeing God in the person sitting next to you? And if we do that, I believe that's very good news indeed. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.